Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. What we have been doing for some months now is exploring the myths about money. Our money system is not what we have been led to believe. The creation of money has been privatized or taken over by a private money cartel. Except for coins, all of our money is now created as loans advanced by private banking institutions, including the private Federal Reserve. Banks create the principal, but not the interest, to service their loans. To find the interest, new loans must continually be taken out, expanding the money supply, inflating prices, and robbing you of the value of your money. We've been specifically looking at a book called The Web of Debt, which unravels the deception and presents a clear picture of the financial abyss towards which we are heading. It then explores workable alternatives. The author is Ellen Brown, and it is a book that everyone should read. In the solution area, we have tapped into a number of sources and resources, in particular the Thrive Movement website, thrivemovement.com. We specifically investigated into the top 10 actions, what you can do in terms of solutions. Those, as a brief review, are 1, get informed, speak up, and connect with others. 2, bank locally. 3, buy and invest responsibly. 4, join the movement to audit and end the Federal Reserve. 5, keep the internet fair and open. 6, support independent media. 7, support organic non-GMO farming. 8, require election and campaign finance reform. 9, advocate for renewable and free energy. And 10, take part in critical mass action. In recent shows, I have been looking at examples of successful programs that ultimately help the economy throughout the world. People are successfully challenging injustice and transforming destructive situations, but rarely does the corporate media tell us these inspiring stories. So we're going to look at some of the people, what they're doing around the world to support the ultimate goal of freedom, health, and prosperity, which is the other side of the equation that most of us see in the debt, sickness, and lack of freedom experiences. So for the first example, at 21, surfer Kyle Thierman has documented the transfer of over $340 million worth of lending power from Bank of America and other coal funding banks to local banks with greener investment portfolios. This sum was almost entirely due to a 4-minute surf video he produced and posted online. He actually is the son of Kimberly Carter Gamble, the producer and director of Thrive. I'd like to share with you the audio version of the video that Kyle made about what he accomplished, something that can practically inspire all of us. And by the way, he's speaking to the audience in his bathing suit.
I had this dream last night where I came up here naked, so close. I love to surf, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel around the world surfing from a really young age. When I was a senior in high school, I learned about something that really caught my attention. I learned that when you put money into a bank, that money doesn't stay there. I learned that banks actually use your money to lend out and make loans. So just like when you need a home loan, right, to buy a house, big corporations also need big loans to move forward with projects. So when you look at this system, banks rely on us for our money, and corporations rely on banks to move forward with projects. So we are actually the ones in the driver's seat here. When I was 18, I took an awesome trip down to Chile. Chile is like, it's like California, but like 100 years ago. And like the waves are great, the people are friendly, the landscape's beautiful. And I was surfing in a place called Constitucion, and there was a proposed coal power plant going in on the beach, right in this town. And all the locals were against this coal power plant, and one of the locals actually took me out to the site of this coal plant, and it was a really heavy experience for me because I was able to see firsthand the unfair destruction of a corporation coming into a community against the citizens' will and destroying it. And that experience of going to that the site of the coal plant, this is right near there, that's me surfing, and it really affected me. And I thought back to what I learned in school about how banks make it possible for corporations to move forward with projects. So I did some research, and I was wondering, like, I wonder what bank is making this possible. So I did some research and found out that Bank of America was the funder of this coal company, and it was a weird experience because I was able to see for the first time that it was our money being used to fund the destruction of this community down in Chile. And I felt like if it's our money that's making this possible, then we have the power to stop it. And I felt like if other surfers could see what I was able to see firsthand, then it might affect them in the same way. And so what else I learned is not all banks are the same. So you put your money into a bank like Bank of America, and it's sucked out of your community to fund, say, a coal power plant. I learned that Bank of America is one of the largest funders of coal power worldwide. If you put your money into a local bank, it's also lent out, but it's lent out within your community. So it's really exciting because in a time when our national economy is in trouble, we have the power to keep our money within local banks and have strong, resilient local economies, even when the national economy is in trouble, which is really exciting because you have the power to stop funding the problem and start funding the solution all in one move. So I made a four-minute movie about my experience down in Chile and encouraged surfers to move their money and open accounts at local banks. And this movie went out on YouTube, and a bunch of surfers started passing it around, and then surfers started taking action and then inspiring other surfers to take action. And then surf companies started moving their money. And then people who didn't surf started moving their money. And I released this movie when I was 19, and I'm 21 now. And to date, I've documented over $340 million of lending power being moved out of Bank of America and into local banks around the country. And this experience in Chile totally led me on the path that I'm on now. Now I run a free online TV series called Surfing for Change, where I take a surf trip and document a social or environmental issue happening in that town and tie it back to Santa Cruz and show a systemic action, daily decision that we can take that will then have a systemic impact both on our community as well as the lives of people on the trip that I went on. So I hope that you check that out, surfingforchange.com. Since my experience in Chile, what I've really learned and taken with me is that through your daily decisions, you have the power to change your community. And through your daily decisions, you have the power to change the lives of other people around the world. And this change starts with something as simple as opening an account at your local bank. Thank you.
For those of you just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And we were just listening to a very nice success story by Kyle Thierman, who's a 21-year-old super surfer, who, through his actions and website, have started the rebalancing of the major bank oppression by moving monies individually to local banks and the effect that that has on the community. So that's one very nice method of solution in dealing with the debt problems we are all facing. Another sample success story is practicing sustainable agriculture with chocolate lovers in North America, and I know there are a few of them. In 2009, Gregory Landau started a chocolate business with the intention of connecting cacao growers practicing sustainable agriculture with chocolate lovers in America. Cacao, the raw ingredient of chocolate, has long been a sacred plant that is now traded as a commodity on the world market. Often cacao production is associated with slave labor and environmental degradation. Greg and his business partners had a different vision for their chocolate business, now called Nova Monda Cacao and Chocolate. They connect farmers and chocolate consumers directly by working with cooperatives and small cacao farmers in Nicaragua and Ecuador, paying fair prices and purchasing directly from the farmers and co-ops. They also participate in ecological harvest and community development projects, further enriching the lives of people in these far-off communities. This small chocolate business goes beyond fair trade and organic standards, challenging mainstream practices in the chocolate industry. It's a great example of the potential of developing solutions rather than just fighting problems in order to create the world we want to live in. As Nova Monda says, they are bringing the sacred back to cacao and regenerating people and the planet one delicious bite at a time. You can actually find out more about Nova Chocolate by visiting their website at www.NovaChocolate.com. NovaChocolate.com. Another kind of solution strategy is the California ballot initiative to label GMOs in our food. And this is an article by Pam Larry. On January 20th, 2011, while the Congressional Agriculture Commission was grilling Tom Vilsack to make GMOs more easily deregulated, unbeknownst to me at the time, I was in a hotel in San Francisco at 7 a.m. in that hover state between awake and asleep. I'd been depressed about GMOs for a long time, and they came into my consciousness. As I drifted in and out of that awake state, it came to me. It was my job from that day until November 2012 election to get an initiative on the 2012 California ballot so that the people of California could vote and bypass the corporate control of our legislatures, both federal and state, and require that informed consumer choice supersede non-transparent corporate profit. The vision to create a ballot initiative to label GMOs in our food in California was not limited to this initiative alone, but to create an army of peaceful warriors committed for the long term to change our food system bit by bit, while always remembering our power to effect change when we unite. I took 6 weeks to get prepared and develop a strategy. I then went live with the website and took to the road on March 10th. Since then, I've been traveling around the state, telling my story, hoping others would join me. we created the Committee for the Right to Know, which is a grassroots coalition of consumer, public health, environmental organizations, and food companies in California that is seeking the labeling of genetically engineered foods, GMOs. We are now an ever-expanding we at tabling events, showing films, speaking to their local groups. These leaders have committed to continue to take this action right up to the election. Once we get this on the ballot, we will continue to organize and educate our neighbors and then do heavy, organized grassroots campaigning starting in the summer leading up to the election. We are proud to have the organizational support of David Bronner of Dr. Bronner's Soap, the Center for Food Safety, Organic Consumers Association, Mercola.com, Nature's Path, and the Institute for Responsible Technology, who are all involved now. On November 9th, 2011, the coalition submitted the California Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food Act to the State Attorney General for title and summary prior to circulation as an initiative measure for the November 2012 election. And we are now amplifying our efforts to get volunteers on board to gather 850,000 signatures from January 4th through April 18th. We are also asking other NGOs and consumer groups to join us in an effort to increase the supporters list before we make an official large press release at the beginning of that gathering phase. The energy is building. Our website is www.labelgmos.org, labelgmos.org. The coalition website should be out soon. We are reaching out to everyone to help us spread the word, as this will require a universe of support, both large and small, as I'm sure I don't have to remind you of who we are up against. We need volunteers. We need money for next year's media campaign. Between this law and our educational efforts, I am convinced that this will impact the world. So right now, we need the whole country to join us to get this done. Please visit the website for more information and contact me with any ideas or questions. Thank you and best regards, Pam Larry. And again, that's www.labelgmos.org. So what we're dealing with is an economy which is in horrible shape and, in fact, being destroyed by the big banks and corporations with a short-term vision on making lots of money, regardless of the long-term impact of how what they're doing is having a disastrous effect throughout the world on almost every area of life and society. And we'll come back to this in a moment. If you are just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you're listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, another very interesting and practical solution is training soldiers to become providers. This is by a Marine. He says, "As a Marine, I understand the challenges of adjusting back into civilian life after a tour. I had served my country proudly, and I wanted to continue to do so back home. This sense of honor and service, combined with my passion around healthy, natural local growing, led me to start Veterans to Farmers. In the future, local food and farming will become a necessity to sustain our population. But today, 85% of our product comes from California or Mexico. This method of larger, long-distance growing of our produce creates enormous problems around water, energy consumption, and resource management. Each state and region is going to have to look at becoming more like small countries in Europe in order to sustainably meet our food requirements within the bounds of our natural resources. But we have our work cut out for us. For example, here in Colorado, we grow within our state less than 2% of what we consume. Colorado, like many states, is a net importer of food, even though we have the sun and resources available to us to meet our own fresh food needs. Not long ago, Spain was in a similar situation when it decided to build greenhouses and start a new way of farming. Today, Spain is a net exporter of fresh vegetables to the rest of the European Union and reaps billions of dollars in benefit to Spain's economy. Israel accomplished the same thing and in turn conserved its precious resources of water, land, and energy. Through the use of greenhouse technology and hydroponics, these countries became exporters of fresh food all over the world. And so we can here in Colorado. Our vision at Veterans to Farmers is to build these types of sustainable growing communities while at the same time training our servicemen and women in a new, rewarding, therapeutic, and wholesome way. We can do this not only with fresh food, but also with feedstocks for biofuel from other crops that we are researching. In this way, we can create true food and fuel security for our states in the future. And this is by Buck Adams, who was honorably discharged from the USMC, and he started Veterans to Farmers. You can take a look at this website, which is veterantofarmer.org, veterantofarmer.org. Another interesting solution came in Italy, where a professor in Guardiagrele, Italy, proves that debt-free money is highly desirable and effective by issuing an alternate currency. The Wall Street Journal reported in October of 2000 that a wealthy Italian professor, Giacinto Moriti, hoped to convince the world that central bankers are the biggest con artists in modern history. He claimed that when money is loaned out at interest by banks, it has roughly half the purchasing power than if it were divided among the people for free. So he decided to test his theory in his small hometown in Italy. He issued a debt-free alternative currency called CIMEC and offered it at an exchange rate of 1-to-1. Soon enough, people discovered that one CIMEC had the purchasing power of 2 lire, and goods started flying off the shelves. Participating merchants were thrilled, while stores that didn't accept CIMEC were empty. 2.5 billion CIMEC circulated rapidly. Due to its success, local merchants eventually formed a committee with the professor as the head to keep the program going. This program needed a wealthy benefactor to get it started, which the government could easily do itself, but it still shows the greatest potential of debt-free currency to facilitate economic growth and prosperity. Another example of coming up with a solution was in New Mexico. New Mexico's House of Representatives voted to pass a bill that allows the state to move $2 billion to $5 billion of state funds to credit unions and small banks. The municipal funds were approved 65-0 and is subject to a vote by New Mexico's Senate. Governor Bill Richardson told the bill sponsor that he supports the legislation. Credit Union Times spoke to one banker who believes that the bill got a boost from Huffington Post's Move Your Money campaign. The altered view of New Mexico lawmakers in favoring local control of state funds, officials said, follows national mention of the New Mexico effort in the Move Your Money campaign of New York pundit Arianna Huffington to her online Huffington Post columns. I think Huffington gave this bill a little traction, said Juan Fernandez, vice president of government affairs for the Credit Union Association of New Mexico. Move Your Money is a project started by Arianna and Rob Johnson that aims to spur financial reform at big banks by encouraging account holders to move their money to smaller credit unions and community banks. New Mexico currently keeps $1.4 billion in accounts at Bank of America. New Mexico State Representatives Brian Egolf and Timothy Keller sponsored the bill. Representative Egolf told the Huffington Post in January that the legislation would direct the New Mexico Department of Finance and Administration to give a preference to a community bank to act as a fiscal agent of the general fund operating cash depository account. And that's all taken from an article in the Huffington Post. So the shift was enormous because $1.4 billion in accounts at Bank America were taken out and put in local banks. It's a huge success for the local banking movement, pulling money out of centralized banks, who are largely responsible for the most recent economic collapse and the continued funding of destructive projects, and putting it in community banks has the potential to create much more sustainable economies. It means more money will be circulating within New Mexico and funding locally owned businesses and sustainable projects. Good job. Congratulations in New Mexico. And one last example for today is the Argentinian Exchange Club. In the 1990s, monies and jobs were scarce in Argentina, so people got organized and formed an exchange club based on the trading of goods and services. The model was a huge success, growing to more than 7 million members who were able to survive without participating in the formal economy. The 1990s were marked by economic turmoil and extreme hardship in Argentina, eventually leading to the economic collapse in 2001. As more and more people were laid off and without work, an alternative barter system grew that became a lifeline for millions. The grassroots movement emerged as the global barter network. In this system, credits were issued for the exchange of goods and services, and members were labeled as prosumers because they were both producers and consumers. Unlike government-issued money, these credits were decentralized and backed by real value, allowing people to exchange freely for things they needed and wanted but could not acquire in the mainstream economy. The model took off and was adopted throughout Central and South America, becoming the largest national community currency network in the world. The system did have some flaws, such as a lack of adequate control against counterfeiting, resulting in stolen inventory. However, it suggests the remarkable power of money that represents real value. It proves the economies can be set up to benefit the people at large without anyone having to pay interest or go into debt. And we will look more into these things in the next show. But first, before I end, as the summer moves along and kids are getting ready for college, a lot of people are going to school but drowning in debt. For the first time ever, student loan debt has topped $1 trillion, more than credit card debt. The top 1% of borrowers owe more than $150,000 each for student loans. Total student loan debt in the United States is now increasing at a rate of $2,853 per second. Students are taking higher loans for higher tuition costs, and 65% of students graduate with debt. On the average, it takes 15 years to pay off a student loan. However, 2 years after graduation, 45% of grads make only $15,000 a year. Food workers at McDonald's make $800 more yearly. One of three graduates take a job that don't require a college degree. And of course, this is affecting the way graduates live. 14.2% of 25 to 34-year-olds still live with their parents. 14% of graduates delay marriage because of student debt, and 21% delay having kids. There is $85 billion of student loan defaults, and unlike other kinds of unsecured debt, student loans cannot be shed in bankruptcy. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.